people tend to write you off, and I don't. It's a bit silly because after all the time we've been around, you know, you'd think, well, I must know something by now. So I always felt confident that if I wanted to do something, you know, and do it right, I could eventually. I like to put some words in songs that if anybody out there's listening, you know, that they can, you know, give them a bit of hope too. You know, it's like also saying, you know, don't worry, it's only a bit of time, and if you keep on trucking, you know, it'll be okay.
I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you.
Hello, I'm George Harrison in the studio for the best of Dark Horse.
Countless rock writers have tried to define the late George Harrison for a long time now. As the 19-year-old lead guitarist from Liverpool in an exciting new band in 1963, the Beatle who persuaded the other members to visit India and study meditation and religion, the first Beatle to release a solo album, did you know that? And the first to have one top the charts, too. George Harrison, the humanitarian, as the architect for the Concert for Bangladesh, indie film producer, George the Comeback Kid in 1987 with Cloud Nine, a hit album. As Nelson Wilbury and his superstar band of five rhythm guitar players with the Traveling Wilburys. And George Harrison, the devoted husband and father. George was all of these things and so much more. When I talked with George Harrison in two separate interviews about his music and his life, George pointed out that, as with Elvis Presley before them, Beatlemania became a sort of a glass cage where the individual members felt held hostage by their fame.
You know, when you're young, you're out there trying to make a name for yourself or just trying to make a living or an occupation, and, you know, ego is necessary. You have to have it. But we went through so much, you know, we were put on such a pedestal, and we had everybody, the whole world was sort of bowing and scraping to us, and the press following us around every day. We were on the front page of all the papers for, you know, a couple of years. It seemed like a long time. And what happens in that condition, I think anybody who has any sense, you realize that there's more to life than this.
I can't say.
Eccentric producer Phil Spector, a now convicted murderer, put his sonic trademarks on George Harrison's What Is Life from George's solo album 1971's All Things Must Pass. Musician and rock historian Dan Zanes writes, and I quote, "If the 60s were a time of cultural exploration, for George Harrison, that exploration was anything but a passing fad. The answers that he found in Indian philosophy came to underpin and inform his entire adult life," end quote.
The book, which is the Hindu Bible, is called the Bhagavad Gita. And I don't know if you recall an album I had out called Living in the Material World.
Sure.
Inside of that, there was a picture of Krishna and Arjuna on a chariot. What the Bhagavad Gita is all about is that the battlefield and the chariot and the horses, you see, life is the battlefield. We're on, in our bodies, which is the chariot, on this battlefield, and the horses are all the senses which are pulling us through the battlefield. And unless we have God or something that, you know, whatever you want to call it, to anchor yourself or to help you get through the battlefield, you're just going to crash. You know, all the experience we gain, sometimes you go through terrible things, but they actually turn out to be good because they help you rise above it. So it's all a learning process. I mean, I think life is just like, you know, going to school, and you have to figure it out, learn certain things, and hopefully rise above it.
Thank you.
huge international hit from All Things Must Pass in 1971. That's George Harrison with My Sweet Lord, a song that would, a few years later, be ruled by a court to have been unintentionally copied from the early 60s Chiffon's hit He's So Fine. A pity, because as Dan Zanes points out in the liner notes of the Let It Roll compilation, and I quote, "From All Things Must Pass through his final album, Brainwashed, one can hear George Harrison's movement between the material and the spiritual realms. It's a movement that sets his work apart from the other major songwriters of his era," end quote. Coming up next, George Harrison's groundbreaking benefit concert for Bangladesh and a ruthless bad patch with the press. I'm Redbeard with an encore from the late George Harrison and the Best Of collection in the studio. I'm Redbeard with an encore interview with the late George Harrison. In a 1992 second interview, I asked George to compare the post-Beatles mid-70s to his life almost 25 years later.
Is it easier now than, say, 5 years after Beatles?
Oh, it's much easier now.
Why?
Just because, you know, the water under the bridge is good. You know, time heals everything and put a bit of distance between, you know, now I can just take it, or like all these songs I'm doing, I can just enjoy it. I can just enjoy it for what it is. I'm more mature, I'm happier, I think I'm healthier.
You seem all those
things. Yeah, and so I'm determined to be able to each day just try to enjoy it. And, you know, that's what it's about, really. It's just about how to get blissed out. And if there's, you know, any chance that I'm going to be in a negative situation or in something that's painful, I don't want to do that. I just want to be happy.
on 1973's Living in the Material World with a song that Dan Zanes notes, and I quote, blurs the line between music and prayer without ever sacrificing the pure melodic force for which Harrison was known, end quote. Isn't that a great piece? In 1971, George Harrison attracted an all-star band, including Eric Clapton, Bob Dylan, Leon Russell, and Beatle bandmate Ringo Starr. Harrison spearheaded a benefit concert for the people of war-torn Bangladesh in the first concert ever held at Madison Square Garden. And the concert, the album, and the film of the event became the template for every rock charity fundraiser from Live Aid to Farm Aid. The life and death nature to this urgent appeal served to further the impression that Harrison was always serious. It would be several solo albums later that we'd finally learn of George Harrison's droll sense of humor.
We find out the kind of the lighter side to George Harrison, almost silly, and I mean that in a complimentary way.
I've always been very silly, really.
But we didn't really see a whole lot of that.
No, because there was a period, if I just threw that period of the 60s when we all went to Rishikesh looking for the light. That side, it got a bit serious, you know, and the thing is, if I don't crack a smile, my face just looks serious anyway. And I think a lot of my songs were, you know, had funny little things in them, but because I wasn't smiling, people didn't take them as a joke. And I think what they did was they pigeonhole me into this thing of, oh, he's the mystical one, the spiritual one, or he's the boring one, or whatever. And consequently, they missed out on some of the jokes that I was putting in there.
After the 1974 album Dark Horse, during which George suffered throat problems, which worsened during the subsequent U.S. tour, the rock press turned ugly in several ruthless reviews.
After that 74 tour, I got such a slagging off in the newspapers or in the magazines. You know, it's like they smell blood and they try and come in for the kill. They try to kill you and then they try and nail the coffin down, the lid, you know, so you never get out again. And I felt that kind of thing happened during the end of 74 into 75, because the time I did that tour in the States also, it was a very difficult period because the audiences were like wacko, you know. They were like, they were drunk and disorderly. And I was thinking, you know, most of these people, half of them may come to see you and the other half come because that's what's happening in town, or they're with somebody who's come to see you.
It's a scene.
And I kept thinking, well, maybe it's better just to play to like 200 people who actually like you than, you know, 17,000 people who are just going somewhere to get loaded. And nowadays, I think everybody's matured. We're all older and the audience may be old, although there are some younger people still coming. And I think it's a much better time. You know, for me, I can control myself. I'm a bit more grown up and I approach it from a much more professional point of view.
And because of all the tears,
Isn't It a Pity? Originally from 1971's All Things Must Pass from George Harrison. Up next, George reacts to the murder of fellow Beatle John Lennon. For this and other rock star interviews, you can visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with part one of our encore interviews with the late George Harrison collection in the studio.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm George Harrison with Redbeard.
Thank you, George. That was George in 1992. We talked about one particularly charming song, Blow Away, from his 1979 self-titled solo album.
You know, I haven't written a tune for a while, and Blow Away, I was just sitting in the garden with the pouring rain. It was freezing cold, and so I wrote that song. It has, like, any given day will have the morning, and then you'll have the day and the nighttime, and in the Indian philosophy, they call this Triguna. It means the three basic elements. It's like creation, preservation, and destruction. But they're all part and parcel of each other. You know, you have the nighttime, which is like this negative kind of dark, but you need that in order to have the freshness again of the new morning. So the song was like that. It started out where everything was, the house was leaking and the pouring its rain, everything's miserable, and I'm just about to, you know, lose it when I just remember, no, wait a minute, you know, all I got to do is cheer up a little. Then the second verse, the sun comes out, by the last verse, everything's cool again.
Day turned black, sky ripped apart, rain for years till it dampened my heart. Cracks and the leaks, the floorboards could rot. About to go down, I'd almost forgot. All I got to do is to love you. All I got to be is be happy. All it's got to take is some warmth to make it blow away, blow away, blow away. All I got to do is to love you. All I got to be is be happy. All it's got to take is some.
Make it blow away, blow away. On December 8, 1980, the world lost a brilliant musician and a fierce defender of human rights when John Lennon was murdered outside his Manhattan apartment building. But George Harrison, George lost a beloved boyhood friend.
Where were you?
Yeah, I was in bed in England when I got the phone call. And it's one of those calls that come when you know there's something wrong because, you know, normally people don't call you about 4 in the morning. And that was it. I didn't answer it. My wife answered it, and she said, "John's been shot." It was a call from Neil, who's, you know, used to, well, he works for the Beatle company, Neil Aspinall. And she said, "John's been shot." And I thought, oh, God, you know, that's typical New York. I thought, well, is he okay? You know, where was it, in the flesh wound or, you know, what? And she said, no, he's dead. And so I just thought, oh, shit. And I just went to sleep again.
Was there any
denial
or disbelief, maybe?
At first, yeah, but she said, no, it's that's it. And the only thing I could think of doing was just going to sleep to get away from it.
Mm-hmm. How long was it until you wrote all those years ago after he passed?
Well, as it happened, I had started to write the song just around that period, and I was intending to write it for Ringo. And then when that happened with John, I just wrote the words then and made it, you know, about that, about John.
So the song was already
the song was, yeah, I had the tune up. And I had a few ideas, but it was going in a total different way to the way it came out.
I'm shouting all about love. Well, they cheated you like a dog.
Now, the melody is light and pretty. How did you keep from being bitter or just outright anguish?
It was hard singing it at first, but again, it's like optimism. And as Christ said, forgive them for they know not what they do. It's like, you know, you have to, there's a law of karma, you know, what you sow, you reap. And it's not up to me to go out there and catch the guy and beat his head in. You know, they'll catch him later down the line. You know, he's going to get it. I don't mean prison. I mean, you know.
Judgment.
Yeah. It all comes back, you know.
Responsibility.
There's no way you can escape any action that you do.
What were Paul and Ringo's reactions when you first played the song to each of them?
Well, actually, Ringo played on the track
right.
with me. Yeah, well, you know, we were all sad at that time, and I think, in a way, it brought us together a bit more. You know, it's like at a time like that, you know, the family tends to come sure. together. And then I called Paul up. I thought, well, might as well see if he wants to sing on it. Yeah, it was a sad time.
Did the mood change from when you started working on all those things that go to the middle to when you were finished with it? Was there some sense of relief or almost an exorcism of that ghost laying there?
Sort of, yeah, a little bit, yeah. And, you know, it's good to get something out of you. I mean, the song was just something I had to do, and I don't know, you know, if people thought it was any good or not, but at least, you know, I got it out, and it was just a few thoughts, really, on the subject.
Here comes the sun. Do-do-do-do.
coming up on the same day and time next week, an encore of the interviews with George Harrison on a variety of subjects, including his reclusive period in the 80s, George's successful comeback with the Cloud Nine album and collaboration with other superstars in the Traveling Wilburys, and his highly touted 1991 Japanese tour with friend Eric Clapton. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio reminding you that the late George Harrison interviews return at the same day and time next week. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017. All rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.